Welcome to episode 15 of the Bounce Back Bogey podcast. As always, I'm joined by Craig Titterington and Braden Brown. We have a very special guest, Mr. Bryn Perry, today. He has amassed over 200 professional wins in his life. He is one of the smartest golfers, smartest coaches around, and it was a privilege to have him on. Please stay tuned for that interview. But as always, let's go to Craig first. Craig, how was your weekend? I know you had a tournament today. How did that go?
Yeah, I hate that we're starting with the tournament because golf's still not fun for me, but I think it's getting there. I think it'll be fun soon. I hit a few good shots. I hit some really bad shots. And we used to have this term my first year of college golf called Craig Smash, because I used to think you had to get every putt to the hole with speed, and I'd just drill them 8 feet past, and I was doing that all day today, so that was fun. And then I went to game one the Canucks game last night, playoff game. That was electric. Like, never seen an arena like that. It was unbelievable. The fans were insane. The team came out, I thought, kind of flat. It's cool because the Canucks are pretty physical this year, so I thought they like threw some good hits and all that, but like just kind of sloppy hockey. Mm-hmm. And then they popped off in 12 seconds, two goals. First goal goes in, everyone's going nuts to tie the game. That was 2-2. And then 12 seconds later, they score again. And it was, I was screaming. You couldn't hear the person beside you. It was just all like, it was so loud. It was like white noise almost. It was really cool. And then after the game, people were just going nuts. There's videos, people climbing the statues outside. It was like we won the cup. So it's kind of embarrassing in a sense.
It was very embarrassing to see some of that stuff.
We were so horny for good playoff hockey. So, it's only been 9 years. And that year, I think we lost to the Flames.
Yep.
So, you know, we weren't very good that year. So we didn't really have a chance. So this year, I think they have a shot. I don't think it's likely, but there's hope. But yeah,
There's a little bit of hope. It's nice to have that electricity downtown again, though. It's pretty sweet. Braden, what'd you get up to the last week or so?
So snow's melting here, and I got myself a range membership at a golf course pretty close to me, and I also joined their men's league, so I'll be playing 9-hole shotgun start handicap matches against some guys every Monday now, so I can give updates on how that's going throughout the year. But yeah, I hit some balls. I got, ever since I got married, and I don't want to take my wedding ring off when I play golf, but I'm getting like really bad blisters each year when I first start to hit balls, because it has to callus up, and don't live in Vancouver where you can golf all year round. So battling through a little blister issue right now, but excited to be hitting balls and kind of flushing it. Not going to lie. Feels a
baby.
Wow. My grip is so, so strong. Like not in a good way, but it's just like coming out of the middle and coming out pure. So I'm not fucking around with it. I'm just going to swing my swing and see what happens first men's night in a few weeks.
You don't take your wedding ring off when you golf?
I don't want to, because I just feel like I'll lose it. So no, I just play with it.
That's weird. You take it off at the strip club. Sorry, Sabrina. Joking, of course.
Yeah, but outside of that, NHL playoffs started, as Craig mentioned. The Jets Avalanche game was amazing. There's been some great hockey already. Couldn't care less about the NBA playoffs. Like the betting odds for NHL playoffs, like the best team, the like shortest odds were like plus 700. Betting odds on the Celtics were like plus 150 to win to win the whole thing. Like that's not fun. Like obviously it'll be fun if they don't win, but the parity in the NHL just makes it so any team could win the Stanley Cup that makes the tournament. I think that's exciting. So Mike, I'll throw it back to you. You can defend your NBA playoffs if you want, but yeah, NHL playoffs are far superior.
I know better. NHL playoffs are better round one than the NBA playoffs, but the NBA is phenomenal in the championship series. But I will say, while we are recording this pod, I just watched the Lakers blow a 20-point lead in the second half, and Denver just hit a buzzer beater to win, and that was fucking electric.
Ooh.
I played golf twice this week. Once at Westwood Plateau. That course just has my number. It's just, I can't figure out how to play well there. And then I played, it is a theme park. And then I played, what did I play this morning? I played Pitt Meadows Golf Club this morning, and it was like Augusta Pure out there. They punched like maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, and it was the purest that I've ever seen this place. It was so nice.
Such a good comeback for a golf course. Like that place before COVID was kind of like teetering. I heard they were like maybe going to sell or fold or something. I don't know if that's true. It's probably not, but they're struggling. And ever since COVID, they had like a boom in membership. It's sick now.
Yeah. I made 7 birdies and an eagle today and 3 bogeys and played pretty good. The putter is working. We're going to stick with the broomstick for now.
Ooh.
Yeah. In other golf news, there are 3 big stories that I want to cover this week. 3 main people. Number one is Nelly Korda. So we all know what Scotty's doing, and he's won 4 out of 5, and he's having the second best run right now in professional golf. Nelly has now won 5 tournaments in a row, including a major. 2 majors or 1 major?
1.
Just 1 major. Okay. But she's won 5 events in a row. She goes into every event as a favorite right now, and she's just destroying the field, same as what Scotty's doing. Did you guys get to watch any of what she did this week?
I watched a few shots, not too much. I know we'll talk about it when Bryn comes on here in a bit, but the LPGA has a slow play problem, and Nelly discusses it. She hates slow play too, which is great. Love that she's dominant, and that's great that like a young attractive American woman is the face of the LPGA tour, and that's like good for viewers. And she doesn't like slow play, so hopefully her voice can advocate for some sort of change. But I don't know, it didn't sound like she played amazing. She just kind of went about her business, shot like 68, 69. I don't know exactly what her rounds were, but just steady Eddie out there. And won by a few shots and 5 in a row. Pretty crazy.
Yeah. Craig, did you happen to watch anything this week?
I did not. No. No, I don't have much to add. Yeah.
Okay, awesome.
It's hockey playoffs. I'm not watching golf.
I'm just watching. As long as these two keep winning, I'm going to keep tuning in.
Yeah.
I love greatness.
Yeah, agreed.
And this is getting very, very boring, but this guy named Scottie Scheffler won again this week. I'm guessing at some point this year, if this continues, we're going to see him at like Tiger odds, like maybe minus or plus 100 at some point. It's getting hard to bet on him, but I keep cashing my bets by betting on Scottie. They're not paying out a lot, but I'm still winning. So is what it is. This was an elevated event, the RBC Heritage. There was tons and tons of good players. He didn't start off that strong. He shot 69 in round 1, 65 in round 2, 63 in round 3, and a 68 to close. And he just went about his business again. And the guys that were behind him, Sahith came second. Wyndham and Cantley came third. Justin Thomas, Patrick Rogers, JT Poston, and Sepp Straka came fifth. And rounding out the top 10, Morikawa and Ludwig. So another stacked event, and Scotty wins by 3. And not necessarily having his A game again. We've kind of seems like we're having the same conversation every week now. But do you have anything to add on this performance?
I'll just comment that I think it was too soon for a signature event right after the Masters. Like, I know we go through droughts of kind of a few dud weeks in a row, and then we're waiting for a big event, and we just had two back to back. Obviously the Masters is way bigger than this was, but Scotty flew home Sunday night. Craig canceled Meredith for I don't even know what reason, but shout out to her for being the best wife ever, picking up him and his buddies in the airport and dropping them off at the bar. But he must have, in that time span, gone to the bar, whatever. And then the next day, well, maybe not the next day, I don't know when he flew out there, but probably didn't even like play a practice round, just got on the tee on Thursday morning, went about his business, just a ho-hum 69, and then 65, 63 round three. So that's some serious golf. And then did what he had to do in round four. It's just, when you're the best ball striker and the best chipper and you're now putting okay, it's just like, what are you supposed to do? You're just that much better than everyone.
Yeah.
I would just like to comment that I canceled Mary Beth and then rescinded my cancellation, then canceled her again. But I am now going to rescind my double cancellation, because as a pregnant wife, picking up your drunk husband after he won the Masters is it's pretty baller. Although at the same time, he just won the fucking Masters. You're gonna get a Porsche. Like, picking him up is kind of the least you could do besides having his kids. So
no, it wasn't that she picked him up, it's that she suggested taking them to the bar at like,
yeah, you better
mornings, Monday morning, and she's 9 months pregnant.
Yeah, but like, what are you supposed to say? No, sweetie, like, don't go to the bar tonight. I need you home for me to have my kid in a month. Come on.
I don't know. It sounded like great wife.
I think she's a good wife. I'll leave it. Yeah, Mary Beth, good wife.
It's tough being a good wife when your husband has made $25 million in the last 2 months.
Pretty good. Pretty good, Mike. What did you think of the tournament?
I saw some interesting shots from Scotty. So obviously he started off round four with a ridiculous chip in on the second hole. And it, like, when you're as locked in as he is, shots like that are still ridiculously hard, but you just expect them to be good. You don't expect them to be chipped in, but like this shot on two, he had to land it in like on a table, and it checked on the second bounce, ran down a hill, turned in, went in for eagle. And then the other weird thing I saw was right before the second rain delay and the round four stoppage, was that he laid up. You never see this from him, but he laid up into the water on a par five. He tried to hit four iron, pulled it into the water, laid up, had like 160 or something yards left in the dark, hit like a rope hook draw around the trees to a tuck pin, and then made his putt for par. And like, if you're playing with the guy, if you're seeing him lay up, you're like, oh, I'm finally going to, you know, get some strokes back on him. And then he got up and down from 150 hooking it around a bush. It's like, what can you do at this point? So
it's got to be so frustrating showing up to an event, and let's say, was Wyndham second this week?
Wyndham came in third place.
Okay, but let's say, okay, let's pretend Wyndham was second, because I don't know who was second. But Sahith, right? So Sahith probably had pretty much his A game. And you're beating everyone else in the field that's the best in the world at golf, and you still lose by a lot.
Yeah.
And it's every week. It's not just like a one-off. It's every fucking week.
Yeah, but they might get a break when Scotty has his baby, or when Meredith delivers the baby here. Maybe he takes a few weeks off.
Mary Beth's cashing checks. Scotty isn't going to take a second off.
The last story from the golf week that I definitely want to touch on was this absolute baller. His name is Miles Russell. I believe he is either 14 or 15 years old. Got an exemption into the Korn Ferry event this week. At one point during round four, I believe he was inside the top five, which is just mental. He shot 68, 66, 70, 66. Top 25 gets him into the event next week. He's about 120 pounds, maybe. And he went toe-to-toe with the best golfers, some of the best golfers in the world on the Korn Ferry this week. Bray, how impressed were you by this kid?
Yeah, very impressed. And he's a lefty, which shout out to Mike and I being lefties. But I saw him a few weeks ago on Grant Horvat's YouTube channel. And this guy didn't even know what YouTube golf was, which, like, obviously we have our takes about YouTube golf. Mike doesn't like it, whatever. To not even know about it, though, is just like next level. I'm in my own zone. Like, I am good at golf. I'm going to be probably a pro golfer. And I'm just going to focus on my own self. To not know about it is crazy. But yeah, he played really well in the YouTube video. To show up on at a Korn Ferry event and just beat, 80% of the field. Pretty freaking amazing. That takes some stones. Is that a record for youngest to make a cut on that tour?
Youngest to make the cut on the Korn Ferry, yeah.
Sick.
Craig, I got to ask you this. So seeing a 14 or 15-year-old come 20th on the Korn Ferry and you struggling to break 80 at Riverway and a G&G today, what kind of confidence does that give you going forward?
Mike, if I had this 15-year-old's resources, like,
oh my God.
You put this kid in the golf shop 6 days a week for 12 hours a day and see if he wants to go out and practice tomorrow. Are you kidding me? Couldn't imagine if I got to hit balls for an hour a day.
Oh my.
Fuck that kid. I'm not jealous, though.
In all seriousness, Craig, what do you think of this kid?
Yeah, it's insane. I don't even know. I'm at a loss for words how you're that good at golf. Like, think of growing up, like, you'd see juniors, like, I mean, like, Kevin Vigneault was, like, a guy we all know, played at SFU, like, an incredible junior golfer. He's still an incredible golfer. But, like, I remember him, you, Mike, like, Dutoit, all these local guys, and they're just so good from like 16 to 18. And it's just like, how are you that, like, how are you guys that good? But then, if no offense to any of you guys, but like at that age, if we put you out on a PGA event or a Korn Ferry event, you'd fucking like stick out like a sore. Yeah. By probably a few.
Yeah.
And this kid is demolishing junior events, amateur events. What, he won the junior players championship or something?
Yeah.
And he's easily making cuts on the Korn Ferry Tour already on like big golf courses. Doesn't seem intimidated at all. Like, I don't know. Yeah. That's all I have to say. It doesn't really make sense to me. Does he hit it far?
His driver distance is about 280, which is super impressive because that's not long out there.
Yeah. And he has, like, he's at that age where you have that awkward body. Like, you don't even have muscle yet. He's like, think about it. Like, they tell you not to lift weights heavy until you're 16. He can't even do that.
Yeah.
The kid hasn't even had a boner yet. And he's, it's crazy. But I mean, that being said, the flip side to the coin, and Chicklets, Spittin' Chicklets always talks about this with hockey players, who are phenoms when they're younger. All right, come talk to me when there's booze, women, and drugs in your face. You know, I don't think he's going to do that. I'm not going to go down that road, but, I mean, it's insane. He's going to be a stud, no doubt.
He feels too dialed to get into that.
Yeah. If he didn't know what YouTube golf was, he's turning away women in college for sure.
There's a very good chance this kid doesn't even go to college.
Yeah. Yeah, he'll probably just turn pro.
We'll do the Akshay route and just go pro at like 16.
Let's get into everybody's favorite segment, cancel culture. I'm going to go this week first to Mr. Craig Titterington. Who would you like to cancel?
I hate to cancel somebody twice. I think who is it? Was it Braden that's canceled this? Yeah, Braden's canceled Zach Johnson twice. I am now canceling Mike Bell twice.
No, king. You can't keep canceling each other.
No, he deserves it. He is the king of the Irish exit. So me and Mike go out for our friend Trevor's, also an SFU golfer, 30th birthday. We're getting old as fuck. And we go out to one under, like, golf bar, you know, like, good group of guys. Trevor's friends, they're all, like, all beauties, all nice guys, pretty similar to, like me and Mike, and we were obviously drinking, and then they want to go to the casino, and I'm anti-casino. Like, I'm charitying $200 to $500 of, and that's money I just, like, I don't have. Surprisingly, as a golf professional, we don't make that much. And anyway, a few of my other friends are out in Yale Town, so I say to Mike, "Hey, Mike, like, you're newly single, like, let's go out to Yale Town. It's a good spot." And so we head out to Yale Town, and we can't find a parking spot. All right, so I know Mike, and I know exactly what he's gonna do here. Mike goes, "Oh, Craig, like, get out of the car. Like, I'll find a spot and I'll meet you there." All right. And Mike's gonna love these guys. Like, Mike would get along great with these guys. And anyway, right away I sniff it out and I'm like, "Mike, just pull up like five more spots. We'll find something." We don't find anything. He's like, "All right, I'm just gonna go park. This is downtown Vancouver. There's 15 parkades around for like $3 for a couple hours." And I get out of the car, stupid enough. I don't force Mike to come with me. Sit down at the table with my friends, texting Mike. No reply, no reply. I can't find a parking spot. This is insane. Meanwhile, Mike is already in Coquitlam at this point. He beelined at home. He's doing 180 down the highway, probably to get away from me. And then, anyway, surprisingly, Mike doesn't show. "Oh man, I couldn't find a parking spot. I just went home." Thanks, Mike.
I looked really, really hard for that spot. I just couldn't find any.
You turned left and went on the highway.
That was a good goodbye. It was perfect. Kicked you out of my car and just straight line home.
It was the most Irish of Irish exits.
Bray, you canceling anyone this week?
I'm gonna cancel the Aeon Risk Reward Challenge.
Ooh.
Now, I don't know if you guys saw this. So normally, the Aeon Risk Reward Challenge picks a hole each week where there's a decision to go for it, to hit it left fairway versus like if there's a split fairway. I don't know. It's usually like a drivable par four or par five where you can reach in two. Their hole this week, the graphic they put out on Twitter, it's like a tight par four. And the decision, like the two choices that you had to choose between was left fairway or right miss, which was in the middle of the fucking trees. Like it's not like a decision. It's like these the two choices, not choices. It's like you either hit the fairway or you hit it in the trees. And it's like left fairway, you hit the green 61% of the time, you hit it inside 25 feet so often. If you hit it in the trees right, well, guess what? You don't hit it on the green that much. So you should probably hit the left fairway. So I just thought it was a ridiculous Aeon risk reward challenge hole and graphic. So canceling them, pick a better hole or change what your slogan is. I don't know.
Very nice. Now we talk about this with Bryn a little bit, but I'm actually going to cancel a Canadian classic here. I'm going to cancel Boston Pizza today
Ooh.
for coming out with the worst commercial in the last 50 years or so. Okay, it's hockey season. If you grew up in Canada and you have a province or a team in your province, you know that when it comes to playoff hockey, you do not cheer for another Canadian team ever. Okay? It's just something that you don't do. Okay, you grew up in Vancouver, you hate the Leafs, you hate Calgary, you hate Edmonton. That's just how it is. Boston Pizza comes out with a commercial, and basically what this says is, "Oh, a Canadian team hasn't won in 25 years. Let's stop fighting and let's just cheer for each other." And it actually made me a little bit sick. The fact that this is just perfectly in tune with where 2024 is, and everybody just having to be okay with everybody else and cheering for everyone and having ribbons. And I'm just fucking sick and tired of it. So unfortunately, I love their cactus cut fries, but Boston Pizza, you're canceled.
I
Mike,
like
this is a country divided right now. They're just trying to bring us together.
it. You guys like their pierogi pizza? I know this is random, but I think their pierogi pizza is elite.
Me and Ed's does a pierogi pizza and it's insane. I haven't had Boston pizzas.
They're both delicious.
Okay. Good
Boston
stuff.
pizza is an underrated pizza. Like, it's sneaky good. but it's overpriced as fuck for what it is.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not getting farm fresh pepperoni here. Like, this is straight out of a mill. It's probably half dog.
All right, that's the end of cancel culture. We have a team event. Craig thought it was the Byron Nelson this week. I don't think that's been a tournament for a few years, but it's actually
it is. It's just later in the year.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah.
It is the Zurich Classic of, is it still Zurich of New Orleans?
Yeah.
Okay, it's the team event this week. Bray, who are you betting on? Let's get into it.
Okay, let me recap last week. So you two pick Scotty. Good for you. Good good betting. So Craig put 10 units on him at plus 400. So he won $40 last week.
Cha-ching.
And Mike, you put 5 units on him and you lost your other 5, but you profited 15 on the week. So that brings our totals. Myself down 39.4 units. Craig down 47.5 units. Mike down 63.5 units. So Mike is the big loser right now, but some momentum. This week, I'm going to be the chalky guy that takes the favorite. I'm taking Xander Schauffele and Patrick Cantlay to win this team event, which kind of a stinky event, to be honest. Don't really know how much I'll watch, but those two boring guys, I think, but they can play some golf, especially together. They're good friends. So putting all 10 of my units on them at plus 400.
Very nice. Craig, go ahead.
All right. Only because two reasons why I'm picking this first team. So I'm going to go McIlroy and Lowry. One, because it's the Countrymen. They're both pretty good. Very good. So I'm going to go $8 on them at plus 800. The other reason I'm picking them is because we need this false Rory hype to build up a little bit. And what better way to do that than a team event where he can get carried by Lowry. So I'm in on them for 8. And then I'm going to go with Taylor and Hadwin, two of our countrymen paired up. Both just solid. I don't know. I think, yeah, why not? So good breakdown.
What are their odds?
They're 25 plus 2,500.
Lovely.
All right. I am 2 weeks in a row. I don't feel comfortable doing this, but my first bet is going to be the same as Craig. I'm taking McIlroy and Lowry plus 800, 5 units. And my second bet, a guy who has been playing very well the last few weeks and seems like his game is ramping up a little bit. I'm going to take Morikawa and Kitayama plus 1,600, 5 units. Bray, have you won a bet this year?
Have I? Yeah, I won a few miscut bets. Oh,
you won the bullshit ones.
Yeah,
the
I won a few legit. That counts as a miscut.
Yeah,
what a
yeah, yeah. But I also won on Spieth missing some other cuts too. So I, yeah, I'm winning right now. We're all losing,
I know you're winning. I don't know how you're winning, but you are.
I had a, like, obviously Scotty ended up winning by a lot. I had Tom Hoagie at 110-1, and he was first round leader. He was tied for the lead. It was like kind of a sweat. Like if I would have won that, it would have been over for you too. You were catching me the rest of the year, but didn't happen, obviously.
Do we have an actual like bet for whoever wins this? Like, is there a punishment of any sort?
Ooh, maybe our listeners should come up with something.
Loser has to run a marathon.
Oh, I'm not doing that. I'm not running a marathon, dude. Well, I'm not gonna lose, so I'll do a half. No training. No,
you have to reverse train. You have to drink the night before 15 beers.
Oh my god.
Okay, to be determined. We'll put it out on socials and our followers can decide.
Oh, I like that. All right. That is going to do it for this portion of the pod. Our special guest, Bryn Perry, is coming up next. Please stick around and listen to it. He is a phenomenal, phenomenal professional and teacher. So this is going to be good. I am very excited to introduce our next guest to the Bounce Back Bogey podcast. He taught me for probably about 10 to 15 years. He taught Craig as well. He has amassed over 200 professional wins across multiple tours. Still plays tournaments to this day. Still kicks all of our asses on the regular. Mr. Bryn Perry. Bryn, how are you doing today?
Thanks for having me, Mike. Appreciate it.
Let's just start off with your day today. I heard you were playing in a little G&G tournament today. How did that go?
Yeah, we were out at Riverway. We had a little bit of wind as a challenge and a couple of super kind of on the edge flags where if you were downhill, downwind, you could putt it off the green. So I got myself around nicely ball striking. I hit 16 greens and I one putted the 18th hole from about 10 feet for my only one putt of the day. So it was not a scoring day. It was a participation ribbon day.
Yeah. And how did that put you against the rest of the field?
I just got out of the car 5 minutes ago. I haven't had a chance to look. I don't know yet.
Gotcha.
I had my roommate shouting in my ear. Did you have any three putts today?
No.
Oh, I had six.
That's not good, dude.
It was a tough golf course, apparently.
Yeah, they were like those. The greens were kind of on the edge where they were a little too inconsistent for the speed, and the pins were like, I'm sure the people that were buying green fees today out there were that was really hard for them. They didn't do any favors to their public crowd.
Oh yeah, they for a municipal track though, I thought it was. I mean, I worked there for a few years, and it's pretty pure.
And you're still welcome back.
I think that place I actually left on good terms. So yeah, I think they're usually happy to see me.
Yeah, that's the course is fun. Actually, I don't get to play it all that often. I'm going to play it again next Monday. We have our media day with the PGA of BC. So I'll play it again next week and it'll probably be totally different. It'll be raining and cold or something like that. It'll be a brand new golf course, but it's a pretty good public track. It's fun.
Yeah. It puts out about 350 golfers a day.
Absolutely. They were all in front of us today.
Oh yeah.
I like it because there's always one side you can just smash driver down and the other side's like kind of fucked. So
yeah.
it's great because I'm just like, okay, I'll aim 70 yards right on number four, but then I still hit it on the road. So
there's a big sign there telling you not to do it too. We walked up there. I'm like, where's the house? I'm like, no, it's an entire freeway.
Yeah.
Yeah. I put one through somebody's 2008 Civic windshield today. So.
One of the things that I really wanted to cover today and something that Bryn always kind of talked to me about was thinking your way around the golf course. And I think where he gains a lot of advantages over people in the field is just the way he thinks his way around the golf course. Was there anyone that kind of taught you how to go about your tournament days or your tournament rounds, or did you kind of come up with the strategy stuff yourself?
No. So I'm going to give huge props. There's a fellow called Neil Smith. And I'm not sure if his business is the same name, but it was Process Performance back in the day. I remember we had made it to the American side of Sault Ste. Marie, and I was on the Canadian tour, and I was about 235 yards away from the green on a par five over a creek. And I knew in the moment, if I could make a four, that I keep my card and I play the next year. And if I make a five, I lose my card and I got to go back to Q school. And in that moment, I couldn't figure out how to do it. And I, like, obviously I was already a pretty good player. I'd made it to the Canadian tour and I was on the cusp of keeping my card on the Canadian tour. So I was finding my way and I couldn't do it. I make par and I lose my card and got up some courage and I went and asked Neil if he'd have some dinner with me. And he was starting his sports psychology, golf psychology company. And, you know, I'd had some interactions with him before and trusted him and respected him. And he was gracious enough to say yes. And we sat down and had about a 3-hour dinner and then followed it up the next day with lunch for another couple hours. And that set the foundation. And I remember I was really good. Mike, you probably remember this name. I was really good buddies with a guy called Alex Roca, a Brazilian guy.
Yep.
And Alex and I would room together when his wife wasn't traveling and we'd play a lot of our practice rounds together. And I went up to Alex and we were going to go play somewhere on the St. Lawrence Seaway, so the Charlevoix Cup. It was going to be 16 Canadian Tour teams against 16 Quebec PGA teams in a two-man best ball elimination. And I go, Alex, like, I'd really like to partner up with you and play. He was really pointed. He goes, well, I just came 18th on the money list and you lost your card. Why would I have you as a partner? And I go, well, I just did this thing with Neil the last couple of days. I really think I'm onto something here. And we went out and we won the tournament. And I came back to Vancouver and practiced for a week and then went back out to Toronto and won Q School. And there was no, like, there was nothing changed. I didn't change my game. But he gave me, like, obviously instant foundational tools on how to plan, how to think, how to prepare, how to practice. Yeah. And I was able to take the skill that I had at the time and just run with it, and been forever grateful.
Yeah, that's the, like, obviously you and I worked together for a long time and we worked on mechanics, but I just have, I have very fond memories of us talking a lot during lessons and you kind of explaining how to do certain things. And I remember this one time, I don't know if you remember this, but we played VGC and you came to the first tee and you said,
"Oh, I know where you're going right now." You got so mad at me. you turned into a little boy.
Yeah. You said, we're not going to play. You said, we're not going to play real golf today. We're going to play golf where you have to always hit it to a certain side of the hole. And I thought it was the stupidest game that I'd ever heard of. And I was so mad because I couldn't beat you. I couldn't do it.
You couldn't do it. No, you were just sour the whole day.
Yeah. It took me years and years to realize that's how you play golf. And now that's kind of the way I teach people when I'm on the course with them. But it took a lot of learning to kind of understand that was the way that you had to do things.
Yeah. And I know you guys have talked about Scott Fawcett before in Decade Golf. And, you know, there was the original strategy, like you can't hide the middle of the green. Okay, fair enough. Like, we all get that. But that's actually also too far away from the flag. You don't need to aim, if you're a really good player, you don't need to aim at the middle of the green. You need to aim to that side of the green. Mm. But there's a little bit of strategy and math you can use to figure out how far sideways to aim to give yourself the biggest advantage. And I guess I figured that out early enough that I was a good enough ball striker and a good enough putter that, you know, if I wasn't the longest player out there, I could still find my way and compete. Mm-hmm. Like, you guys hit it too far now. I don't know about you, Brady. You live in Red Deer. The ball probably goes far whether you hit it far or not.
Yeah, ball goes a little further here, but I don't hit it that far anymore. About 10-15 years ago I did when I was a junior, but not so much anymore. I'm no pro like these two.
You can get longer till you're 65 and then all bets are off. So go get those speed sticks.
Yeah, fair enough. I was going to ask, so you mentioned Scott Fawcett and stats and stuff. What has changed the most, whether it's stats, technology, distance, over your course as a pro?
Well, the equipment, you know, I grew up playing with very small driver heads and a Balata mm-hmm. ball, right? So I think, you know, my starting point was I was hitting down on my driver, taking big divots with irons, trying to like trap draw, so to speak, a short iron to get some speed on the ball and make it go somewhere and control mm-hmm. it in the wind, right? And I think... I think the people that are playing now, they're going to hit the ball a lot higher and they get the ball up in the air. They swing a lot harder, but they've been able to learn with a different ball. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not a dinosaur, but it's almost like I've switched from a wooden tennis racket to a graphite tennis racket. And yeah. I've had to kind of adapt as I've gone. And I think some people that like it really trips them up. It's hard. And I find it reasonably easy to hit the ball 280, but I can't, like, Mike hits it 315 in the air, right? It's yeah. like, you know, I can hit it, you know, 265 in the air, and that's not bad for 52 years old, but I hit balls beside Gary Woodland on the range at a Canadian Open and just like the sound, mm-hmm. Braden, like the sound of his driver was incredible. It was like I don't know. let me hit one driver like that and I'll probably just be a walk-off. I'll just retire. You guys will never see me again.
Yeah.
Love well, that. So Mike kind of said the word that I was going to say talking about your instruction was cerebral. And I remember I was playing with Mark Strong a couple years ago and like the pro assistant, he was in our group. And we were just talking about like different instructors. And he goes, I think Bryn is a bit of a genius because it's, the way he teaches, it's kind of like, I feel like you follow Adam Young quite a bit and yep. kind of adopt like the same sort of thinking as to like how you teach. So it's like not necessarily putting your student in certain positions or anything. I think you generally will kind of stay away with that or from that with like, especially a good player. And you kind of talk to them and get them to like, think their way through a swing change, if that makes sense. So it's like, okay, if I want you to cut the ball, hit the outside of the golf ball kind of thing. And then that in turn fixes the issue they're working on. Is that fairly accurate?
Yeah, I like your example. I don't know if I've ever specifically asked somebody to hit a side of the golf ball, so I'm gonna not take a plug for that. But yeah, I think a couple of things. We all own our swings, whether we like them or not, whether it's aesthetically pleasing or we want a vanity show. Like, we all have our swings, and our swings, even if we hit a bad shot, our swing actually repeated. And the timing might have been off, or the feel was a little bit off, or our trust was off, or our target, we didn't kind of buy into it. But our swing's our swing. And I know, Craig, in the time, like you kind of joke, like you can hit driver off the planet sometimes, but you hit driver off the planet with the same swing that makes you rip it down the middle. You don't sometimes believe that or trust that. So when I'm coaching, what I'm trying to do is get people to imagine things that they can do with their swing to get the ball to go in the fairway or on the green or to the left side of the flag, right side of the flag. And the only time I really want to work hard on someone's swing is if, especially like you said, with a good player like you, if there's a shot that you can't hit. Well, okay, then let's understand the mechanics so we can hit the shot. Mike hits driver really far, but he hits the ball low a lot. So how as a junior golfer do we hit it high? And Craig, you hit the ball really high. Okay, well, how do we hit the ball? How do we flight it into the wind, right? So everybody's got their thing that they gotta learn how to do, even if they're only doing it once or twice in a round of golf, but they have to learn how to do it. And a lot of coaching, I think, is finding that nuance of how do you get somebody to do something they don't know how to do using the swing they have? And if they're failing, then you get into the mechanics and try to teach the mechanics of that new shot.
I
Okay.
like
that a lot. I like that.
And then kind of on top of that, I guess, did you ever change your approach? So correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you've kind of talked about being a bit of, you were a bit of a late bloomer, maybe not like the most highly touted junior college player or anything like that, but then kind of like really progressed with your game a little bit later than most. Did
Yeah,
you,
100%.
yeah, did you, what, I guess two questions. What age was that around? And then on top of that, was there anything you changed specifically, like on your outlook on the game?
Yeah, so my first year on the Canadian tour, I was 24, so very, very late bloomer. Like, I was 16 years old. I think I came like eighth in a BC junior. And when I was 23, I came second in a BC amateur and made the Willingham Cup team. And 24, I qualified for the Canadian Tour, and I made one cut. I remember I was playing in Winnipeg. I was with Mike Weir's old caddy, Brennan Little, before he was Mike Weir's caddy. And Brennan and I bet a jug of beer on the back nine because we both thought we were going to miss the cut. So we were just betting ourselves. And I guess it was enough motivation for me to try to beat him. And I made the cut that week, and I made $800, and that was my only money for the whole year. So I took a little hiatus. I was away from golf for about a year and a half and went back and got my card. And at the end of that second year, I met Neil. So now I'm 27. And 27, 28, 29, 30, I really figured out how to play. So by the time I was 30, I was having a legitimate go day after day after day.
Did you, and I know you touched on this already a lot, did you feel like when you talked to Neil, did your skill set improve or did just the way that you were thinking around the course just get that much better?
Yeah, the noise went away, Mike. So I think my skill set improved because there was a focus and a point to what I was doing. It wasn't like, how about I say this to you? I think sometimes, especially with an amateur golfer, they evaluate their skill level shot to shot. And then as you get a little bit better, maybe you evaluate yourself round to round. And then you get a little bit better. Okay, now you're evaluating yourself over the course of a few weeks or a month. But I think when you get to be a really good player, you're like, okay, well, over the last year, over the last couple of years, here's how I feel like I play. Right. And I think I got to that point where I could buy into what I do and how I do it. And this is going to be me, and here's my platform. And I'm going to go wax poetic from the top of that platform. And I'm not really going to debate it or change it. And if I have a bad day, it's like Ted Lasso be a goldfish. Just write it off and go try again.
One of the cooler things I remember, this has got to be maybe this has got to be pre-COVID, maybe like 2015, 2016. I remember I came in for a lesson one time and we were talking about your goals for the year. And you said you really wanted to win the Canada Cup. You really wanted to win something else. And we were talking about fitness a little bit. And you said you wanted to like do running and do squats and lose a certain amount of weight. I think it was maybe add some speed. And it was pretty cool because you did exactly what you said you're doing. I don't know what it was, like 500 squats a day plus a run or something like that. And then you ended up winning a bunch of tournaments that year. I'll ask this two ways. How much do you think like fitness in general has changed the game? And how much do you think it helped you when you decided to start doing that?
Yeah. You know what, Mike, you have an unbelievable memory. I love the story about Vancouver Club and I love that question. So thank you. I had a goal. My kids were the age where, you know, if I took them to a PGA Tour event, they would understand what's going on. And, you know, I knew my career was about done. You know, I was going to get a couple more kicks at the can, but I thought it would be pretty cool to put Debbie and the boys on a plane to Toronto and go play the Canadian Open and have the boys kind of see Dad play a PGA Tour event.
Yeah.
And I just kind of put my head down and went. And I remember you went and played the Budweiser with me.
Yeah, that's right.
Right? Like as far away from the PGA Tour as you can ever be, right? Yeah. Like buttfuck nowhere, horrible golf course, just like unbelievably bad, right?
Yeah.
So I drove home from the Budweiser and the next day I went downstairs and hopped on the treadmill. And I remember I probably hadn't run since I was in high school, right? Like not like maybe run back to the tee to hit a provisional, but like not run, right? So I started running and I remember I called my buddy. I'd been on the treadmill for a couple weeks. I'm like, okay, I'm going to do like a legitimate run. I ran for about 20 minutes and I called my buddy. I'm like, okay, I ran for 20 minutes. That was really hard. When does it get easier? And he said, he goes, you don't understand. He goes, if it's easier, you've either run shorter or you've run slower. Mm. Now that you know how hard it is, you'll always go farther or you'll go faster. And it was like the light bulb went off like, oh, okay, I understand how to do the work now. And I was going downtown and throwing med balls in the gym and getting stronger. And I could do pull-ups for the first time in my life. I lost 35 pounds. You know, it was fun. Like, and then when I went to play tournaments, I felt like I deserved the opportunity to do well. I still had to capitalize on the opportunities, but I could look anybody in the eye and go, well, you haven't worked harder than me. If you beat me, then you're just a better player, but you're not beating me because you're more prepared or you're more fit or you're stronger. You had a better day than me or you're a better player than me. And there was a lot of confidence that being fit and being in good shape gave me to go out and try to perform. And I think, you know, one of the things that I did is I would put the treadmill on the highest speed that I could put it on and sprint. And then while I was sprinting, I would play the 18th hole under pressure in my mind. So when I got to the 18th hole, it seemed very slow and very easy compared to playing it at however fast, what does a treadmill go? Like 13, like basically you're on the treadmill, I'm running 13 miles an hour. I'm going, this is the same speed that a marathoner goes the entire race. I'm going to go off the back of this thing in about a minute and a half. So,
yeah,
but you know, it felt good for me. Right. And it did a lot for my confidence and, you know, my body felt that I could play 4-round tournaments and not be tired.
Yeah. So it's a little bit of a mixture between getting physically healthy and it also opening up to you, like feeling like mentally you were kind of ahead of the field in a way.
100%, buddy. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
There's interesting story I've heard before. I think it was a couple of years ago on another podcast. I think it was on 4Jack. Can you tell us about your season on the Korn Ferry Tour and specifically, I want to rehear the story if you don't mind telling it. Your wife is your caddy.
Okay. Yeah. So Debbie was great. She, I remember she came out and she caddied. I hit it in a bunker, like a really, really big bunker. And it wasn't very close to the green. So there was probably about 20 yards of sand that she would have had to rake for me to get out of this bunker. And there's two stories. I actually think I know where you're going with this. I'm going to tell a second story. this was the first time Debbie caddied. So I hit it out of this bunker and then we all finished putting on the green. And as we were walking on the next tee, I looked down in the bunker and it's not good. I had to get back in the bunker and clean up the rake shop. It wasn't very good. No, the where you're going, okay, you just reminded me. So Debbie was caddying for me in Richmond, Virginia. And it was like 108, like so hot. If you got out of the car and it was air conditioned, you went around the back to put your shoes on, like your underwear are wet before you tie your shoes. Like it's hot. It was the first time I'd ever seen the side of my knee sweat through the pants. And you would get like the top of your sock sweat and side of the knee sweat, like places that it doesn't happen in Vancouver. So my favorite thing was to get a tuna sandwich after 9. So Debbie, after 9, she goes and gets a tuna sandwich. And I promptly hit one in the trees, and we got the 5-minute ball search back in the day. So she's holding this tuna sandwich. And it's so hot that, especially for the girls, like they're wearing like a colored shirt, their colored shirt would bleach through the caddy bib. And the caddy bibs are changing color, right? They're not white anymore because of the. So she's holding this tuna sandwich, and I'm whacking it around in the bush, make double bogey, go to the next tee. Tee off, and she picks up the bag and falls over. Right, so she's out. I'm supposed to keep playing, and she's on the power cart going back to the clubhouse to get medical treatment. And they're like, "Okay, we'll look after her. If there's any problem, we'll come get you off the golf course. And but you know, trust us for a couple minutes. Play one more hole. We'll let you know how it's going." So Debbie goes back into the clubhouse. They cool her off, look after her, and the trooper that she is, she's like, "Okay, well, she's letting me down. She has to come back out and finish this round." So she decides that she's going to walk all the way from the clubhouse back out to whatever hole we're on at 108 degrees to join back in and caddy for me. And I had another lady who was a member at the club had asked me, "Do you want me to caddy for you the rest of the round? I'm a member here. I know my way around." I'm like, "Yeah, okay, absolutely. This sounds great." So I don't know if you guys would remember a rules official we've had for years, Joe Almasi. Is that a familiar name?
I know the name. I don't think I've ever met him before.
Okay, so Joe, you know, he was actually a friend of mine at this time. So he sees Debbie walking back out. She's probably walked a couple kilometers back out. You know, she fell over an hour ago, and now she's walking back out. And he comes up to me and goes, "You got a problem." He goes, "Your wife's right there. If she touches your clubs, you're going to get disqualified." I go, "Well, what do you want me to do?" He goes, "You actually have to tell her that she's fired. You have to fire your wife." So poor Debbie walks all the way out here. I got to go over to her and say, "I'm sorry. The rules official tells me I have to fire you because I have another caddy on the bag right now. And if I can't switch back to my original caddy because I'll get disqualified." So she had to kind of tough it out and just walk around the last couple holes. And we got her back in the air conditioning and cooled her off. But so I had to fire my wife.
That's so good.
That's amazing. You've had great success on mini tours, played Canadian Tour, Korn Ferry, a few PGA Tour events. There's just so many great professional golfers. How thin, in your mind, are the margins between tours? Like, is it fractions of a shot per round or over 72 holes? What do you think about that?
No, I think it's bigger than that. Like
Okay.
the I like obviously everybody's a much better player now than when I got started in 1994, 1997. Like everybody's so much better now. Kids are coming out of college and winning. Like Åberg's top 10 in the world already. Like it's just spectacular how good he is. So back in the day, you would have four flights, right? A flight, B flight, C flight, D flight, and you'd have three groups per 9 in the morning and afternoon wave, right? So there'd be six groups per flight in the morning and six groups per flight in the afternoon, and you were kind of lumped into that flight, and you would tee off B, A, C, D. So once you kind of have made a few cuts, you're in the B flight, and you're getting kind of the 7 o'clock to 8 o'clock time in the morning. And then you're getting 12:30 to 1:15 in the afternoon, and then the superstars go out right after you. And then C flight, you know, you've made a couple cuts and you're not really making a whole bunch of money. And then D would be you've never really made a cut or, you know, you're a sponsor's invite. And you could see, especially on the Canadian Tour back in the day, like the A flight guys, like they just basically warm up. They're never at the course practicing. They've done all their work before they get to the golf course, and they show up. Do their work, go out and play, try to win the tournament. B flight guys are kind of less prepared. They're practicing at the tournament, trying to figure it out in the moment. C-flight guys are kind of the same thing, but maybe just a little bit less polished. And then D-flight guys are like showing up with bags of McDonald's on the range and, you know, drinking Red Bulls and, you know, and it was pretty obvious that there was this caliber difference inside that tour. And then Nationwide Tour, so Korn Ferry Tour now, Nationwide Tour was a little bit different. All of us wanted to get off that tour, right? So you qualify for the tour and you go in the meeting and you're super hungover because you just finished six rounds at PJ West yesterday and, you know, hit the shot on 17 over the water and didn't splash it. And you're like, okay, I'm a member of a tour and you're super hungover. And now you got to sit and watch all these videos and talk about accounting and visas and policies and media. And, you know, it's exciting, but at the same time, everybody's a teammate. Like they want you off that tour. It's like either let's make you successful or let's retire you. Right. We don't want you on this tour for 10 years. So everybody kind of bands together and you work to get off that tour. Right. So, and then you get to the PGA Tour and I think, you know, you find your way and you become a member of that club. But you know, when you get to the PGA Tour, you've just taken someone's job.
Yeah.
Right. The Korn Ferry Tour is kind of like a holding pen. Right. Nobody, you're not stealing anything from anybody, but if you make it to the PGA Tour, somebody else isn't there anymore.
Yep.
Right. And that's a really big deal, especially now with the amount of money they're playing for. So I think that my perspective would be the talent level is pretty different as you go through the ranks.
Yep.
And there's a lot of guys that'll have a pretty good kick at the can on Korn Ferry Tour and have no chance at all on the PGA Tour. And then there's other guys that probably won't make it to the PGA Tour, but if they did, they would find a way to stay there.
Yeah.
And they might not ever quite get there, but they would be good enough to stay there if they did.
Mm-hmm.
So long answer, but that's what I think. That's
great. Mm-hmm. So Nelly's won five events in a row. Scotty's won four or five now, I think. Yeah. With a second place in there. Yeah. Do you have a time in your career where you kind of were on some sort of run, kind of like what they were on? It doesn't matter what tour it was on, but do you remember winning a bunch of events in a row or kind of what that felt like going from tournament to tournament and just feeling like, you know, I'm the best player here?
So, yeah, I'm going to answer that with the context that I'm doing that in Vancouver, not in the world, right? But yeah, sure, you know, like big fish, small pond, right?
Yeah.
You know, Scotty's playing 56 holes on the PGA Tour without making a five, right? Like unbelievable level of golf. Unbelievable level of golf. So I did. Like Mike, I had 1 year. I think that the year that I actually went off and went to Q school in 2008. The stats that I remember, I was 310 under for the year. I played 56 rounds of golf in a row without being over par, and I won 16 out of 30 tournaments. So that's how I get to answer your question.
So good.
So big fish, small pond, right? And, you know, good enough to go to PGA Tour and almost get through. Like I missed by a shot. Like I was legitimately a good player and I knew where my ball was going. And you know, I went to Q school and one of the rounds at Q school on the Nicklaus tournament course, I was 64. Like I could play.
Yeah.
Right. So that was kind of my high water mark, but I was pretty good then.
What's your mindset or feeling when you're in some sort of run like that? Like if you can talk to how maybe Nelly or Scotty feels right now when they're on the course playing a tournament.
It's gotta be so fun.
Yeah, it's gotta be so fun. I think you get nervous for different reasons. I don't think they're nervous hitting shots. I don't think they're nervous hitting tee shots. I don't think they're nervous putting. I think they get nervous because of the weight of the expectations. Like Nelly, it's gotta be really hard for Nelly because she's the face of a tour.
Yeah.
You know, Scotty's obviously the best player in the world, but Nelly's the face of a tour. Like the tour's relying on her to bring fans in and to raise the purse. And I'm sure she's getting pressure to play every single event because every event needs her from a sponsor's perspective. Like the pressure's gotta be just outrageous, right? So what would my take be? Like, I kind of felt a lot of times I was a horse with blinders on, you know, I could only see what was in front of me. Like I was playing well enough. I didn't see the out of bounds. I didn't see the water. I didn't see the rough. I just saw, you know, where my ball was going to go through the sky. Like I kind of always played with a window. I want to launch the ball through a window and I can see the shot tracer going through the air. And I didn't see anything else. There was no carts going around the distance. I didn't hear people jingling change. Like little sidebar. I've hit a shot on a golf course before where an airplane crashed and I didn't notice. That's right. A pretty ridiculous level of focus right there.
Yeah.
So I think that's a little bit what they're like. Like I watched Scotty chip in and he hit some shots and he's bouncing them off the fringe and they're just trickling over the edge of the fringe and curling down to the hole and going in center cut with putter speed. And it's like it's superstar level. Right. Yeah. Like that's not really practicable. That's confidence. And he feels that he's in so much control of his golf ball. He can take shots on and they'll work out for him. And he's not debating his technique. He's not debating whether he's going to make a mistake or whether the shot won't work out. Like he just executes time after time, after time, after time.
Yeah. The game's never easy, but does the game seem easier when you're in that kind of mindset?
Okay. I like this question. I've answered this a lot. So here's my perspective on golf. Golf is the same amount of hard for everybody. You just have a different amount of skill. You're starting on a different staircase. You're starting on a different floor in the building. But every day, golf seems the same amount of hard for everybody. But if you're Scotty Scheffler, you're starting as the best putter in the world, and it's hard. Mm. If we're teaching a lesson to a new player at the range, it's really, really hard, and they're starting as a beginner. But it never really gets easier. You just have a lot more skill, and it's still very, very hard.
Yeah.
I like it. Nelly recently on No Laying Up after her win yesterday, she commented on slow play and how much she hates slow play. And
well, she must have hated Sunday at Chevron.
Yeah, I know. And it's a big problem on the LPGA in general, but it's on the men's side as well. I recently proposed on last podcast a shot clock format where you have a certain amount of time. You have to hit within that time frame and you can call like 5 timeouts per round. What are your thoughts on slow play in general? Is it a big problem on mini tours and whatnot? And what kind of solutions could there be to combat it?
So I would love the opportunity to do this. Your question is so well timed. We were sitting around the other day having exactly the same conversation. And I would like to play in the shot clock open.
Ooh.
And my solution is we have an air horn. So if you give me... So like I'm going to be a little bit pompous here. I don't think it'll happen exactly like this, but I believe if you give me a stopwatch and an air horn that I will fix slow play that day in 30 minutes. So what'll happen is within about the first 10 minutes, there'll be a player who goes out, and I guess the way golf's supposed to work is we have all the rules and we all follow the rules, but then how long you have to hit a shot is a guideline.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So generally speaking, if you're first on the tee, first in the fairway, first the chip, first the putt, you have a minute. And then the other people in the group have 40 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to make that an absolute. I want to make that a rule. Yes. Right. So if you're 41 seconds, then too bad. It's not a warning. It's not a fine. It's a shot. We're mm-hmm. going to add one shot to your scorecard. And there's no ifs, ands, or buts. You cannot argue. Right. It's a rule. So what'll happen is about 10 minutes in, someone will be over their time par. And I'll blow this air horn like the start of a shotgun. Like we're talking a 20-second pull on this air horn, right? So everyone on the golf course is like, oh, Craig Titterington just got a penalty. Right? So it'll take about another 25 minutes and everybody will settle down and then someone else will get a slow play penalty and I'll blow this air horn again. And I bet you there's not one for the rest of the day. Now, the caveat I'm going to put on it is I think being able to solve problems in a short period of time should be part of the skill. So
yes,
Craig, I'm going to pick on you. If you feel like you're hitting your ball crooked while you're searching for the ball for 3 minutes, you should be thinking about if I actually find it in this spot, how will I play it? How far am I going to hit it? What angle am I going to pick? What club am I going to use? I'm going to go under this tree, over the tree. What happens right now is you search for 3 minutes. And then after you find it, you take your rangefinder, you walk all the way out in the fairway, you laser the green, you figure out how far you're going to hit it sideways. Then you go back in, take 7 or 8 practice swings, pitch it out. This whole thing takes too long. But the skill should be trying to either execute a good shot or recover from a bad shot inside the time you're allowed to use to play the shot. That would be skillful. That's going to demonstrate who good players are. So, you know, I think Chevron was in trouble because they were about an hour and a half outside of their TV window. Like that can't be good for anybody. And I don't know if you guys are tuning in to watch that. Like, I want to watch Nelly win a tournament, but if she's hitting one shot every 20 minutes, like, I don't think we're going to retain our interest for very long. So we've got to speed this up. And I think they have to take a go at making the amount of time you have to hit a shot, switch it from a guideline to an actual rule, and then give penalty shots. And I think we'll get there pretty quick.
I love that. There's too much gray area. I love, like, math was my favorite subject in school because it's either right or wrong. Like, you're either within the guideline or not. And I love your point about like, making decisions within your time frame should be a skill, or figuring out what you need to do is a big skill and something that should be rewarded. I hate the argument that some people make that the guys are playing for so much money now, and like, they're coming down the back nine at Augusta and they should be able to take more time because it's the Masters and a big deal. But no, like, that doesn't make it more exciting for the viewer. And the reason why they make so much money is because people watch. They should have to adhere to the rules all the time. So I love that air horn idea. We might have to make the air horn open.
We'll have the air horn open for sure.
I have a little more of an extreme version of that. I said that if somebody violates their shot clock, we have a redneck come out of the woods with a rifle and put one in the kneecap of the guy. And then, you know, no one's going to play slow for a long time. So, like, and that, yeah, that, I think that'd be pretty good.
But then, will be maimed open.
the as somebody who occasionally hits it crooked from here and there, the problem with me of thinking about my shot is where I'm going to play it is I don't know where that shot's going to be. So it's like, if I'm in the trees, I don't know if I'm going to have like a nice window, a bad window. On top of that, my brain is 100% focused on finding that ball. Like, I can't multitask. So I guess there's a skill in that and planning ahead, but I just need to find that ball.
Well, then you'll have to chip it out sideways all the time.
Probably help. That'd probably be better for me. So
yeah, isn't there a stat that once a PGA Tour player hits it in the woods, they average bogey? So maybe stop trying all the hero shots.
I think that's the plan. I think Scott Fawcett, I think, has a rule where it's something like a 9 out of 10 rule. So it's, I think you like basically try to hit that shot if you can pull it off 9 out of 10 times. But if you think there's no shot you can pull that off 9 out of 10, chip out sideways.
Awesome, love that.
So, yeah.
Bryn, you've played with a lot of good players across many tours. Is there anyone that you played with that really stood out to you? Like, this guy is different. I know you mentioned Woodland already.
Yeah, Jason Day.
Jason Day.
Yeah. So, well, two, Jason Day and Dustin Johnson, but Jason Day for a different reason. I actually got a chance to practice and play with Jason Day a fair amount when we were on Nationwide Tour. He was only there for the 1 year, right? And then he was off to the PGA Tour. He would be the guy. I don't know if you guys have ever seen the TaylorMade video. I think it's called the Jason Day Story. It's about 12 minutes long, and it talks a little bit about his family setting up him up at the school, and then him kind of getting to work and understanding, okay, well, this is your opportunity. And he has a comment in this video. He said he was working so hard, and he would walk on these putting greens and look around and say, I wonder who's deciding they're going to come second today. And when I was playing with him on the Nationwide Tour, he won that year. He might've won twice, but he won that year and played his way off the tour to the PGA Tour. And he gave an interview later on. He said it took him 4 years on the PGA Tour to walk on a putting green on the PGA Tour and kind of look around and see Tiger and Phil and Ernie and BJ and go, I wonder who's thinking about coming second today. Right. And that's a pretty powerful thing. So he kind of had that mindset. But the way he went about his business, the way he practiced with his coach, Colin, the way they prepared, the way they talked over shots on the golf course, it wasn't close to what anybody else was doing. It was just way better. Dustin Johnson was different. Obviously he doesn't play golf anything like Jason Day. Personality's not the same, concepts not the same. I played with him Well, here's a story for you. Do you guys know who Jim Herman is?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Heard okay. the name, yeah.
So I had lost my card on the nationwide tour and immediately had to go back to Q school. And I got the University of Auburn course and it was super grainy. Like the greens must have been like 8.5 on the stem and chipping was like really hard. Like I didn't get a lot of chipping in the grain growing up when I was a kid. So whenever we would play a tournament and there was big grain, that was like, you know, full flaps on for me. So I'm watching Dustin, you know, I got paired with him on the weekend. We kind of played our way into the same group on the Saturday, Sunday for Q school. And I didn't know who he was. He was fresh out of college and he starts hitting the ball and it's going 40 yards past me. And I'm thinking like, I'm pretty good. I'm thinking like, he's going to make a mistake. Like everybody hits it this far, like he's going to screw this up, but he just never did. And he putts well. And, you know, he went on to win the tournament and I think I came second and Jim came third. So fast forward a couple of years, Dustin Johnson wins the World Golf Championship event on the same weekend that Jim Herman wins the secondary event on the same weekend that I win the Chilliwack Open. So DJ gets $2.5 million and Jim gets about 850,000 and I get 2,800 bucks.
That's such a good story.
Mike, I don't know if you have anything more with golf. Go ahead if you do, but if not, I want to just ask, you're a hockey fan. I know, big Canucks fan, I believe. What do you think of them this year and do you think they have a shot?
Well, I loved watching that game yesterday. That was fantastic. Were you guys all watching?
I was at it.
Yeah.
You were all, you win.
Oh yeah.
I'm a Flames fan, so I'll leave this conversation.
Absolutely no sympathy from here. Yeah. Well, you win, Craig. That's awesome. I remember, Mike, do you remember going to opening playoff game back in the day a few years ago? You and I,
yeah.
I came in, you were still a junior. I came in, I think I picked you up and we went on a SkyTrain downtown and we were waving the towel, right?
That's right. Absolutely.
That's fantastic. I have a great memory of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, they looked good last night. They came out hitting. They came out with a ton of energy. It was really cool to hear you two get back in the building as a, you know, when they came out for their warm-up, you know, that kind of gave me chills. That's how I kind of grew up watching and listening to the Canucks. So, you know, they need their role players to do what they did yesterday, and I think they need their superstars to take turns stepping up and being the best player on the ice. And, you know, they definitely have a chance in this series. I don't know how they're going to match up with teams going down the road, but, you know, they're going to give Nashville a fight, but Nashville's going to give them a fight too.
Yeah. I think if they beat Nashville, they're on to Edmonton. I just don't know how you stop McDavid. But that being said, I think we swept them on the regular season. I don't know if they got us once.
Yeah, but they were so bad early in the year.
They were horrendous.
We were beating Edmonton when Edmonton was San Jose. It's not really the same thing.
Yeah, very tough matchup. Good coaching, though. I think that's made a huge difference, too.
Big time, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of accountability from the head coach now.
Did you guys look at scores for today? Do we know who won this afternoon?
I have them up here. Carolina had an insane comeback. They were down 3-0 and won 5-3.
Wow.
Toronto beat the Bruins 3-2.
Matthews. You said with absolutely no enthusiasm in your voice at all.
If the Flames aren't going to win, I don't want any Canadian teams.
So Braden, last night in the Canucks game, Boston Pizza came out with a commercial. And in the commercial, they're like, hey, no Canadian teams won the Stanley Cup for like 3 millennia. Why don't we all cheer for every Canadian team? And I almost threw up in my mouth. I'm like, yeah,
that was the dumbest thing I've seen.
That's awful. Like, I will cheer for Detroit before I'm going to cheer for another Canadian team. Like,
exactly. No, I know. It's so soft. Like, I did see that commercial.
Suck. You can't change my mind. I don't care if you guys are playing for the Cup.
I could get on the Oilers bandwagon if the Canucks get knocked out.
No,
you're terrible.
Boo.
Yeah, that just said everything I need to know about your character right there.
I have one more golf question for Bryn. So obviously you're still a young guy, but do you have any wants to play on like a Champions Tour or a Senior Tour anywhere as you get older?
Yes and no. Like I really wanted to kind of I think for me, I got a little bit unlucky. You know, COVID hit everybody a little bit differently. It hit me kind of at exactly the wrong time. you know, it kind of, that was the year that I needed to ramp everything up and play as much as I could. And there just wasn't anything to do. There wasn't anything to play.
Yeah.
And, you know, my wife has said a lot of really intelligent things to me over the years, which isn't very hard at my skill level. But she said to me a long time ago, she goes, you know, back when you were young, like, you couldn't beat Phil Mickelson and Ernie Els and Jim Furyk when you guys were young. What makes you think you're going to be able to beat them when you're 50? And yeah, okay, fair enough. I get that. There's maybe they got worse. I don't know. Maybe there's less of them. I don't know. But I really needed that COVID year to play, and I didn't get to. And I think it was just kind of the perfect storm that, you know, pulled the plug out of the bathtub. And so, you know, if I get to play, it'll probably be because I get on a hot streak and I go down and qualify for the Boeing or something in Seattle, or I go to Calgary and try to qualify for the Shaw in Calgary. But I'm actually really enjoying coaching, and I'm a little bit at a time losing the tournament addiction.
Yeah.
So, you know, if I can do what I did a bunch of years ago and get fit and get strong and get back in the gym and I find that motivation again, then maybe, but probably not.
Sweet.
Okay. Mike, sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Okay. I want to know, kind of talking about coaching, what are your student pet peeves? Like, what are your least favorite lessons, if you have any? And kind of the, I don't know if you want to say this, but like the worst type of people to teach.
Well, I'll tell you, it's changed over the year. I used to be absolutely petrified of Shank Guy. I would, and Shank Guy, like if I had a tournament tomorrow, Shank Guy was the last lesson this evening, 100% of the time. And I've got an hour of Shank Guy, and then I got to go to sleep on that. And then tomorrow I got to go play. So that was really tough at the beginning. Now I think actually a Shank's pretty easy to fix, so I'm not too worried about it. I think the guy that really, really thinks he knows what he does wrong and has misinterpreted, right? So let's take this as an example. If you are Instagram or TikTok or YouTube golf guy, girl, person, and you're watching all of that information, I'm going to say that 70% of it is not correct to start with. Mm-hmm. So let's now filter out that person is not intelligent enough to figure out what is correct and incorrect. And then they're trying to solve their own golf game with not correct information. Right. So how about I try this on for you? If you have a hypothesis, you're going to be working to prove your hypothesis wrong at the same time that somebody else is going to try to prove it. You're going to try to prove it right at the same time that somebody else is going to prove it wrong. Mm-hmm. And if somebody else proves it wrong, then if you keep going down that road, that's like intellectually dishonest, so to speak. Right. So they're all taking this lesson and they have now created a problem that's not real that they're trying to solve while they're not solving the problem that actually exists. Right. But they have all of this information in their head, and it's hard for you to kind of cut all the wires and, you know, take the plumbing out and take the wiring out and then rewire and replumb that house with correct information. It takes, you know, and if somebody wants to do that in an hour, it's nearly impossible. If they're doing more of a, you know, a spring or a summer series with you, then you have some time. But that person that's overburdened with lots of bad social media golf is a really, really difficult lesson.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So talking about the Shank problem, is that a one size kind of, or I don't know, what's the saying? Sort of like a one fix now that you use for most of those guys, or is it always a different issue, or how do you go about that?
Well, I think if you can swing the club in any shape that you want, right? You could come over the top, you could be hard inside out. It doesn't matter which direction you swing the club. You could hit the ball off the toe or the heel. You could hit the ball with an open or closed club face, right? So a shank is not caused by your swing. It's a depth perception challenge. So most people that hit a shank, they've actually addressed the ball reasonably close to the middle of the club at address. And then at impact, they've swung the club too far away from their body and they've hit it off the hosel, right? So, you know, I know you guys all go to the gym. If you're doing deadlifts, if that bar is too far away from you, you're not going to be able to lift that properly. You're going to hurt yourself while you're doing it. We've got to get that weight the right distance away from your body to be able to use the most amount of power and to lift with proper technique and form, right? So a shank is you've swung the club farther away from your body at impact than you were at address, right? So obviously we can use Dr. Scholl's. That's a pretty good thing for golf these days. I like them, you know, on my range mats, we've got the rubber tees, and I'll set the toe of the club right up next to the rubber tee, and I'll ask them to try to hit the golf ball without hitting the rubber tee, right? And that fixes a shank. They stop shanking it right away. And, you know, another drill, I've never actually had anybody fail this drill. I'm sure there's the one person out there, but if you have somebody address a golf ball and you ask them to make a practice swing and they swing between the ball and their feet, like, I want you to miss the ball, swing between the ball and your feet. Don't hit the golf ball. No one, not a single person that's ever done that drill for me has accidentally hit the ball. They all miss it. So they all have the ability to swing the club closer to them. And we just have to get them to understand what portion the portion size they're trying to do that to hit an actual shot.
Yeah, that's we need to shout out Chris Hebner for this one. I don't know if you heard that episode, but he Mike's buddy was ripping the covers off his Pro V's by hosling them so often. So
well, he should be able to fix that in about 2 minutes.
Mike, I don't know, do you have
hey Craig, I have a shank story for you though.
Okay, yeah. Go.
So I've gone down to Rio Rico Resort to play Q School. It is so far south past Tucson that there are kilometers on the street signs in America. That's how far south it is. So I'm at Rio Rico Resort. Left on every hole is terrible, and 100 miles right is fine on the whole front nine. The whole back nine. I started on 10. So I go out there, no caddy, and I am nervous, like just like hands shaking nervous. And eagle the first hole, birdie the second hole, birdie the third hole, birdie the fourth hole, par the fifth hole, birdie the sixth hole. And I get to the seventh tee, six under par, and I'm like, I can't stop shaking, but I'm playing unbelievably well. And the one trick of this golf course was the sand is so bad that if you hit it in the sand, it'll plug. And you have to swing so hard that it's hard to figure out how the ball's going to come out of the bunker. Like you're going to leave it short or you're going to hit it long a lot. So we get to this par three and it's about 185 yards over water with a bunker behind the green. And there's a two group wait. So I stand there for 40 minutes watching everybody make double bogey on this hole at six under par through six. And then I hosel rocket it back into the next fairway where I just came from. So my guys are walking to the green and I'm going around the wrong side of the lake. Now remember, no range finders. So I get to my shank that's in the middle of the last fairway and I walk 93 yards up to the hole, 93 yards back to my ball, second shot on the par three, hit that fat because I was terrified, and then make a 70 footer for par because that's how my day was going. So from there, it was pretty smooth sailing and I got myself around in 63 that day. So there's my shank story. It doesn't have to hurt anybody.
Amazing.
What kind of a random, well, sort of random question, I guess it's a golf podcast, but what's your favorite golf course and your favorite tournament that you've played?
Golf course is easy, Royal County Down. It, my expectations were so high and we got there and it lived up to every single expectation I had. And usually you're just like, I've put this thing just on this massive pedestal. Went back a couple years later with this unbelievable first time experience and it lived up to the expectation again the second time. So that one's really easy. There's, have any of you guys played over there?
I went to Ireland 2 years ago and I walked out on County Down. We were stupid enough not to bring our clubs, but then we played Port Rush and Port Stewart in the same day. We just called up and we had to go play. So we went out and played those with rentals.
Oh, awesome. I'm happy for you. That's so good. So in Royal County Down, when I walked in the clubhouse, the thing that happened to me that kind of set the stage was you walk in the front door and on the left-hand side, there's the wall of photos. So I'm looking through these wall of photos and the first one I see, there's a photo of old Tom Morris with his tweed jacket and his bow tie and his hat and he's got his pipe. And there's a little caption underneath, if I'm remembering this right, old Tom Morris has been commissioned to design the links at Royal County Down for a fee not to exceed 2.5 pounds. And you're like, dude got on a boat, went over here, stayed for however long to build this golf course. And this is what we get to play today. Like just mind-blowingly cool. So the next photo that I look at, there's a split screen. And on the left-hand side of the screen, there's all of the guys in their jeans and their Mac jackets with their shovels and their picks and their axes that have built the golf course. And then the other side of the split screen is the 60 strong guys in their ride-on mowers with their uniforms prepared the golf course that I got to play that day. Like, that's pretty cool.
That's so cool.
You know, like 120 years apart, right? Yeah. And then kind of look down the wall a little bit and I'm like, okay, we're going to get to go play. Like, you know, we're going to be up here in a half an hour. This is awesome. And they had a picture after the guys had won their first majors of McIlroy and Graham McDowell walking off the first tee, carrying their clubs, wearing shorts, two lads going to play. And they're about 80 yards off the first tee, you know, away they go. You're like, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do that in about 30 minutes. This is unbelievable. So Royal County down, no question asked. And then the Masters. Augusta National is just second to none. Like, I'm 52. I've been watching golf for 45 years. So every person in the last 45 years, I've got to watch them take on the 10th hole and the 12th hole and the 15th hole and the 16th hole and the 18th hole. It's just, you know, you see all of your heroes and all these icons take on these incredible famous shots. So Augusta, like, no questions.
Yeah, I feel like that's everybody's. What about favorite one you've played, though? Like, favorite tournament that you've... Is there anything that stands out where you're, like, really excited to play that event each year?
Yeah, I love going back and playing Victoriaville for the Canada Cup. It wasn't really a course that suited my game. Mike, it would have been perfect for you because you just rip it over all these corners and hit short clubs in on par fives. You would have been able to reach all six par fives every single day. And I could only reach four of them if I hit good tee shots. But, you know, they at the level that I got to, they were offering up a first place check of 30 grand. And, you know, we got to go away in the middle of summer and stay in a pretty cool town with, you know, we get about 5,000 people on the golf course. And they filmed it a couple times. I think they had camera crews out there and they didn't have any ropes. So we'd go play and the spectators would be right around the tee box and they'd come out and kind of line up in the fairway behind us and then right around the green. And, you know, if you're trying to get off the green and go to the next tee, like they want to get to the next tee too, to see the shot you're going to hit. So you have to kind of push your cart and wind your way through all the people to get to the next hole. And they wouldn't even know you were behind them. Like they're trying to do their thing. It was such a cool environment. And, you know, they hosted us in an unbelievable fashion. The golf course was really fun to play. The scores were always really low. And, you know, that was kind of our major of the year, so to speak, that wasn't a PGA event. It was put on outside of that spectrum. But and then the year I won the PGA of Canada, we played at Magna in Toronto, which was, they had that course in just unbelievably good shape. So I've got a you know, obviously my brain has the memory of winning that tournament that one year at Magna.
Yeah. Yeah, if I win a tournament anytime soon, that will just be my favorite one.
Riverway.
If or maybe, when, Craig, you got to...
The G&G event when no one shows up, I'll claim that.
Colchina in 2 weeks.
Craig, yeah.
Champion.
Yeah.
Hashtag nice player.
If you guys don't have any more questions, I think we've covered a lot of good topics today. You guys good with that?
Yep.
Craig and Bray?
Yeah. Yeah. This last thing really quick I want to ask them is, should we do the five finger challenge? So if you had five drinks you could have for the rest of your life, so one on each finger, what would they be?
And that's five, all you can drink.
Yeah.
Five drinks?
Yeah.
A wheat beer, a glass of cab, a Moscow mule, a really nice glass of scotch, and a rum and coke.
You just need water.
You're an alcoholic. You're drinking alcohol forever.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough. You guys win. I'm also drinking scotch now, and it's 10 o'clock at night. So
I know. I saw that. It looks good. Delicious. That's five alcoholic drinks. I like that.
I thought that was the theme. I just rolled with it.
Yeah, you won. You won. Good job.
I didn't even hesitate. I just ripped those off. No problem.
That's great. Bryn, I want to thank you very much for coming on today. You have some incredible stories, and obviously your career speaks for itself. So appreciate you coming on and talking to us.
thanks for having me, fellas. Enjoyed it. Thanks so much. Yeah.
Thank you so much. Thank and also Bryn. Really quick, just shout out social media. I know you're getting more involved with that. So Bryn Perry Golf, good follow for any golf content.
Thanks, Craig. Appreciate it, buddy.
All right. Okay, sweet. Thanks, Bryn.
Thanks. Good night, guys.
See ya.
See ya.
For the Bounce Back Boogie podcast, this is Mike. I'm here with Craig and Bray. Thank you for tuning in again, and we will see you next week.
See y'all next week.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. That was fun. See ya.
My baby born a Birkin. She's been telling me all night long. Gasoline and groceries. The list goes on and on. It's 9 to 5, ain't working. Why the hell do I work so hard? I can't worry about my problems. I can't take them when I'm gone. One, here comes the two, to the three, to the four. Tell them bring another round, we need plenty more. Two-stepping on the table, she don't need a dance floor. Oh my, good Lord. Someone pour me up a double shot of whiskey. They know me and Jay Daniels got a history. There's a party downtown near Fifth Street. Everybody at the bar getting tipsy. Everybody at the bar getting tipsy. Everybody at the bar getting tipsy. I've been boozy since I left. I ain't changing for a shit. Tell my mind.